We're talking about fall and winter tree care here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kahn. Thanks for being here. This is my favorite time of year in Wisconsin. The fall color, so stunning. And since we've spent more time at home in the pandemic, I've come to appreciate the subtle changes of our trees as the months pass by. I just visited yesterday the Tree Learning Center on the DNR's website. It says a single 8-inch diameter red oak in a backyard in Wausau provides $51 worth of annual benefits, which will increase as the tree grows. What type of trees do you have in your landscape? Do you have questions about disease or pruning? We're at 800-642-1234 throughout the hour. Brianna Frank is a certified arborist and a qualified tree risk assessor. She owns Tree Health Management in Madison. Brianna, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
It's so fun to meet up with you at this time of year because all the glorious trees that you care so much about are just stunning. So, you know, besides...
Yeah, they're really showing off right now.
They are showing off. Wow. And so besides admiring their color, what should we think about with the trees in our landscape or on our property? How can we be good stewards?
Well, I think there's lots of things to think about. I think one of the biggest... calls we're getting at this time of year is just to book pruning. And, you know, we have kind of different objectives for pruning, and dormant season is a great time to prune because a lot of those active disease cycles have completed and we're at much less risk. In fact, you know, some trees you can only prune in the winter, like oaks to prevent oak bloom, elms, crab apples are something we like to prune in the dormant season for those reasons. So I think that understanding your species of trees and kind of when those pruning needs take place, you kind of get that one shot. If you have a tree that has to be pruned in the dormant season, you get your shot is now to book that pruning and really get it done for.
And then you get really busy.
I think
that's how that works.
Lots of caregivers for trees right now are extremely busy. Yes.
If we want to try pruning ourselves, can we do this ourselves?
Absolutely. There are some guidelines that we like homeowners to know. One is to make, how to make that proper pruning cut, because there are definitely ways to irreparably damage a tree if you don't know how to prune. And, you know, there's lots of resources on the Wisconsin Arborist Association website to really understand how and where to make those cuts so that you're not doing any damage to your tree. And then it's always important to reach out to your local arborist if you have questions before pulling out the saw. But we encourage homeowners to think about pruning, and a very, a safer time for them to do it is definitely in the dormant season.
And with pruning, you're actually promoting growth, which is what I have to tell myself over and over, because I'm just like, oh no, don't cut back the tree. I love the tree.
It's true. And sometimes there are some trees that we're very careful with, like for instance, mature oak trees. There's a lot of times where we will only be pruning something like deadwood out of the tree, and we're actually not pruning any live growth. So we are oftentimes managing trees in the dormant season for safety, removing that dead wood, and then also managing them at times for disease where we're pruning out diseased tissue. So it's true that pruning does stimulate growth, and that's why you want to be really careful with some species to not stimulate growth right before winter so that we don't have any new growth that is damaged in those really cool winds.
We have with us Brianna Frank, a certified arborist and a tree risk assessor. She's fielding all your tree care questions as we head into the colder months. What are the trees doing in your landscape besides being absolutely beautiful? Join in with your tree care questions, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Nancy from Greene County. Hi, Nancy. What's going on with your tree?
Hi. I have three older arborvitae. They've been in maybe 10, 20 years, and then a new arborvitae that was planted this year, and they all have developed brown fronds. They're not spots on the needles. They're just brown branches, I guess, as though they either have some disease or it's from dryness. And I don't know. I haven't noticed any disease elements on them. And the older arborvitae, I would think, would be established enough that even though we haven't had rain for the last month or so, would be fine in this weather. So I don't know what it is, and I don't know what to do about it.
Nancy, thanks. And this is in the evergreen family. Is that right?
That's correct. Those are coniferous trees. It sounds like, I do have a question for you, Nancy. When you say that your needles are browning, is the whole branch browning, or is it the inner portion of the tree that is experiencing brown needles?
It's the whole branch. You know, when I just noticed it about a week ago, they've just been so healthy. I don't even look at them closely, and then they're, you know, from afar you can see these brown patches of where the I don't know what to call them. Are they needles? At the end have died or at least turned brown.
Yeah, so that is actually a concern. Right now we are experiencing, you know, for the past couple of weeks we've been experiencing fall needle drop, which is a natural occurrence. But the difference between the natural occurrence and something that is more serious is that you wouldn't see dieback of the entire branch, which you are. So it is not inconceivable that it wasn't drought that did that. And I know there's a perception that older trees don't need water during drought periods. And unfortunately, that's not true. There are species that are drought tolerant in the state of Wisconsin, but we're not a drought state. We don't have trees that are adapted to those long drought conditions, which we did experience this summer. So I would, in fact, look into drought being a partial cause and, you know, potentially some root issues, but it's certainly something that if an arborist came to test and see if we had any disease issues, et cetera. It doesn't sound like we do have disease issues. It sounds like potentially a water or a root problem to me.
Nancy, thanks. Let's bring in John now, joining us from Stanley. Hi, John.
Hi. Things. I guess I wanted to kind of piggyback on that last. I also had a pine tree that turned brown, just a few branches, and then within about a week, it just seemed to die. I just cut that down. I don't know what that is. But my question, I have a couple of oak trees, and a couple of years ago, I noticed on the one oak tree in the branches, it started getting like these swellings, or like ball-shaped swellings in the branches. And I didn't really pay any attention to it. I thought maybe those branches just break away or the tree would kind of, I don't know, get healthy or whatever. But now the tree next to it is also getting those swellings in the branches. Is this something that's spread through the roots or through the air? Or should I cut these trees down to prevent them from going to the rest of my trees?
So, John, are the swellings almost perfectly round?
Yes.
So what that sounds like to me is something called cinnamon moss gall, and it is something that afflicts many, many oak trees, and usually we don't treat for it because it doesn't cause, it's mostly a cosmetic thing, but if we do have a really large infestation where it's starting to cause some twig dieback, then our first approach is usually to relieve other stresses on the tree so that the tree is able to fight off that insect issue on its own. So the gall is actually formed from the insect feeding on the tree, and then the tree is forming the gall in response to that feeding.
Wow. All right. Certified arborist Brianna Frank, our guide to all your tree care questions. Do you have an ash tree being treated for emerald ash borer? How's it doing? Have you planted any new trees this year, or are you looking to plant a new one this weekend? We're at 800-642-1234. We'll get back to the trees in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. We're talking fall and winter tree care here in the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. My favorite thing is to go on walks through the Glen Oak Hills and Owen Conservation Park. We're so fortunate here in Madison to have beautiful urban forests. And I want to give props to the Wisconsin Urban Tree Key. It's this one sheeter created by the DNR, and it identifies all the broadleaf and conifers, and there's a little ruler on the side so you can measure your leaf. It's super handy, and we use it on our walks to identify trees. There's a link at WPR.org/mornings. I love it. What's your favorite tree? How do you teach kids about trees? Do you think about trees differently now with the fires out west? Join in at 800-642-1234. Brianna Frank is a certified arborist taking your tree care questions and former president of the Wisconsin Arborist Association. So, Brianna, John and Stanley there briefly mentioned an evergreen going brown very quickly. And can you explain a little bit what might have been happening there?
Sure. So we have gotten a lot of calls for conifers that are losing their inner needles, which is a natural seasonal cycle, and it's part of the normal plant cycle. And white pines at this time of year are exceptionally dramatic in their drop. So we tend to get a lot of people that call in super concerned about those trees, but really they're only meant to retain that 2 to 3 years of growth. And then they lose their needles just like, you know, other trees shed their leaves during the fall. So as long as that new growth looks good on the outer portion, then we can tend to put people at ease when they call in that this is just a natural phenomenon that happens each year at this time.
This is just nature taking its course. Let's bring in Jeremy now in Eagle. Hi, Jeremy.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Yeah. I had a question. Our yard has a lot of black walnuts, some rather large silver maples, sugar maple, a red maple, and a bunch of oaks. Probably the end of July, beginning of August, we started noticing on the silver maple leaves kind of like a brownish black fungus starting to curl some of the leaves. We also had a huge problem with tent caterpillars, and most of the trees that had that were the black walnut. Could this be an effect of that?
Well, I think what you're probably experiencing with your maples and the kind of the edges turning black and crinkling up a little bit is a fungus called anthracnose, which is very, very common. And we had a particularly intense year with it. And, you know, from all of our experience, these fungi really had several life cycles throughout the year, which increased their spore loads. And generally, anthracnose is simply a cosmetic disease where you don't really treat for it. Your buds are already set and ready to come out for next year, but your leaves this year just didn't look so hot. And you know, we kind of with a disease like anthracnose, it's usually better luck next year. So you don't really have to worry about that affecting the health of your trees. And as far as the tent caterpillars, those generally just feed inside of their tents. So unless you have a tree with them really covering everything, we don't treat for those either. We just let them feed inside of their tents. And then they're just generally not a very big problem. If you do have a situation where, you know, it's a bigger nest and it's unsightly, you can always prune that out and dispose of the material where they're nesting. But generally, we consider that more of a cosmetic thing as well.
Jeremy, how does that sound?
That sounds good. Yep, I was just two well-answered questions. Mm-hmm. We had a big problem with the tent caterpillars in general in our area, Lulu Lake State Forest area. So lots mm-hmm. and lots of tent caterpillars this year, so.
All right.
Thanks for checking out your trees.
Absolutely, Jeremy. Thank you. We have Brianna Frank, our guide to all your questions about trees, and she owns a tree health company in Madison. Let's go on to Dave now, joining us from Janesville. Hi, Dave.
Hi there. Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a white birch, paper birch. I just noticed this year that it was split right in the center about a probably 18-inch split in the center, eight feet up the one of the main trunks. There was about 10% dieback of some branches and limbs, but nothing too serious. I was wondering if that will kind of self-heal itself, or is there anything I could do? I've seen some techniques to kind of drill a bolt through and put wood on both sides of that trunk and kind of squeeze that main trunk together to help itself heal, but just wanted to get your thoughts and comments on that.
So absolutely. We bolt and we cable trees all the time. We put braces and often they are metal braces in trees to preserve them. I mean, I would definitely have somebody take a look at the tree to make sure that there is enough solid wood to bolt, and that after the bolting, the tree is actually going to seal up and still be stable for you. But bolting a tree that has split is a very common practice in arboriculture, as well as potentially installing a cable in the upper canopy to prevent further physics on that crack that you see. So you may end up having to do a combination of those two things where you have a bolt in the crack and the tree, that just kind of becomes part of the tree. The tree will swallow that up and use that forever for stability. Also want to make sure that you remember that it's there, because if you ever do have to make a cut, it's not fun to run a chainsaw through a bolt.
What about the cable? Would the cable be there for the life of the tree?
Generally, when we cable trees, yes. The cable is there for the life of the tree, and there are different choices in cabling materials. So some of them, like our steel cables, they really hold up for a long period of time. They require inspection every few years, but it's foreseeable to get a decade out of a steel cable on a birch tree.
Just fascinating to think that the tree swallows up the bolt.
Absolutely. It will put on that reaction wood and grow right over the top.
Dave, how does that sound?
Great. Thank you. That's kind of what I was thinking needed to be done. So appreciate your professional.
And good luck.
Experience.
Yeah. Let's go to Marland now from Finnemore. Hi, Marland.
Hey.
Hi, what's your question?
First of all, my favorite tree is the walnut tree. I've been blessed with lots of them. My question is, what would be the early signs that a walnut tree should be harvested for early signs of disease or maturity? What signs should I look for harvesting?
Marlon, congratulations for having the walnut be one of your favorite trees. That's not something we get to hear very often. So I love walnuts as well, but they do have a fruit that can be somewhat annoying in the urban landscape. So as far as harvesting your tree due to maturity, I would say that is more of a logging question. That's not something, you know, I would never recommend that somebody cut down a tree just because it was mature. I would recommend that, you know, if it's a landscape tree, that you take a look at what types of defects it has and if it's causing any safety issues. If it's not, I would probably let it live out its lifespan, unless I were looking to do something like a forest management type situation where a forester was involved and I was looking to log.
Marlon, what do you do with those walnuts?
Sometimes gather them and crack, most of the time let the squirrels do their thing with them.
Well, Marlon, I don't know if you know this, but you can also tap those walnuts for syrup. And walnut syrup is absolutely one of the most delectable, wonderful things that exist on planet Earth.
Go for it. Marlon, thank you so much for calling in. You know, we're talking there about walnuts, but what about fruit trees, Brianna? How should we care for fruit trees, especially with pruning?
Well, there's lots of fruit trees that love to be dormant pruned. And so you definitely want to make sure that if you are pruning your trees this year, that you are ready to do that in late February. That's really a wonderful time to prune, you know, apples and pears. I think overall, we also want to make sure that we are mulching the bases of those fruit trees, because, you know, lately we don't really know what we're getting for winter. in Wisconsin, and it's really nice to be able to have that extra insulation in case we don't get the snow to insulate those root systems so that we don't experience things like root rot in spring. And, you know, those trees are really ready to go.
We have Brianna Frank with a certified arborist and a tree risk assessor. She's taking your tree care questions throughout the hour. Do you have fruit trees? Have they bore fruit? How are they doing this year? What questions do you have about fall and winter tree care? What do you want to know? Be part of this at 800-642-1234. You can email your question to ideas@wpr.org. We'll be back with Brianna Frank right after this news update. Stay with us. More trees ahead here on the Ideas Network. We're spending the hour on fall and winter tree care here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Department of Natural Resources says proper tree care starts when we select a tree. And what we do to our tree in its first few years of life will affect its shape, its strength, and even its lifespan. What questions do you have about trees in your landscape? What have you noticed about how they leafed out this year? Did they drop their leaves early? Are you concerned about disease? How is your ash tree doing? Join in at any point, 800-642-1234. We have Brianna Frank, who is an arborist and qualified tree risk assessor, and she's our guide this hour. So, Brianna, is it fall an okay time to plant a tree?
Fall is actually a wonderful time to plant a tree. Sometimes, you know, depending on what you want to plant, availability can be tough. And there's some plants that have certain dig times. So there's certain types of trees that can only be dug in the spring. And we know their survival rates are better if that happens. So those plants we don't plant in the fall. But if you're able to plant in the fall, you get this kind of wonderful watering reprieve where you water the tree in the fall, and then in the spring you get to wake up to nature watering your tree instead of you watering your tree. And you have those few months of really, intense water before the summer months hit. So I think fall is one of the best times to plant a tree. You know, sometimes it's not the most attractive time to plant a tree because oftentimes we'll be planting something that just has sticks and no leaves. So you really have to just wait until spring to enjoy the pleasures of that. So I think that's sometimes why people like to hold off. But we do like to plant in fall.
And when we're picking a spot, what should we keep in mind?
Well, I think one of the biggest things to keep in mind is knowing the size of your tree. So really planning for those mature specs and making sure that you're not doing something like planting a very fast-growing tree right next to your home and then having to really intensely manage and prune that tree to fit in its space as it grows. You know, we'd rather give that tree the proper space and maybe plant a tree that has a little more density and is going to compartmentalize decay and really handle pruning well throughout its lifetime next to structures. So size is probably, number one. And I think another really important thing is to make sure that you're getting local stock. And we've had some really intense fluctuations in temperature. And people ask all of the time, what can I plant to prepare for a changing climate? And, our best answer to that is really plant something that is raised locally. Use your local nurseries that have been growing in fields in the state of Wisconsin, ideally. It's going to offer the best chance of tree survival over our unpredictable fluctuations in temperature.
And when we stick that root ball in and put that tree in terms of digging the hole, what size hole and how should we make sure that root ball is properly tended to?
Sure. So I think one of the biggest mistakes that I think arborists would agree that the biggest mistake is really planting a tree too deep. So, you know, you want that hole to be 2 to 3 times the size of that diameter and width. But you most certainly don't want to plant that tree too deep. So we want to be able to kind of see where that root flare, and that's where the tree kind of tapers out at the bottom and you see it widen out. We want the top of that root flare to be at soil level and sometimes just a little bit high. And, you know, we generally like to tell homeowners to aim a little bit high because you do always have a little bit of settling when you do dig that hole. So we want that tree to settle in at or slightly above soil level so that we don't get issues with, you know, girdling roots and adventitious roots coming out of the base of the tree and compressing that vascular tissue when the tree gets older.
That makes sense. Let's bring in Nick now in Green Bay. Hi, Nick.
Hi, good morning. This is Nick from Green Bay. I'm the owner of about 1.25 acres of really mature wooded property, and we're hoping to let a little bit more light in so we can do some gardening. What's the best way to figure out which trees to trim back? Is there a certain species like pine I should go for, or should I should just go for all the little ones? What would you recommend?
Well, I would definitely recommend knowing your species. So if you have something that has that is a little bit more aggressive in nature and or invasive, I would work towards those first. Like, for instance, if you have box elder that is going to readily seed in everywhere, I would concentrate on those species that were essentially pushing other species out. And another thing I would really consider is making sure that you are thinking about diversity as you're pruning back. And if you're, you know, eventually going to thin out any of the trees in totality, meaning you're going to take them out, that you make sure that you keep that species diversification on your property.
Nick, thanks so much. Let's bring in Nancy now in Madison. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. Yeah, so I don't know if it was 2 or 3 years ago, hard to keep track, the city cut down our ash tree in front of our house, and they planted a golden glory dogwood. And I was, you know, excited. Okay, dogwood, flowers, beautiful flowers. No, not so much. And, you know, I watered it, you know, as much as they said for the first year, and I haven't done anything to it since. And it did appear to produce some kind of a little, like, 1-inch red berry type thing. And I just wanted to know more about a golden glory dogwood.
Sure. So that's a medium-sized tree, so I'm guessing that got planted perhaps because of a power line overhead or some other impediment where you really can't have a full canopy large tree. So it's a good species size-wise. It fits the space. And carnelian cherry dogwood is it's a beautiful plant that has, you know, kind of a wide and layered structure. As far as the fruit, it is actually a more insignificant fruit. So that seems right on for a golden glory dogwood. We do really watch for different types of canker when we manage dogwoods. So those are different types of fungi that infect the vascular system of branches, and you'll see some branch dieback. And if you do see that, that's something we want to get pruned out right away.
If you have a tree that may be susceptible to a fungus or a fungus might be growing, is that something that the homeowner can be able to identify or what should we look for?
Yes, I mean, there's a plethora of different types of fungi in the landscape. There are fungi that will cause defoliation of trees, some different types that will cause cankers and cause dieback in trees. And there's also some opportunistic decay fungi where you'll see, you know, fungal conchs and actual fruiting body. So those are all reasons that you would want to contact your arborist and get that fungi identified so that we know what kind of problem it poses.
We're talking with arborist Brianna Frank, navigating all your tree-related questions this hour and how to be good to our trees. She's former president of the Wisconsin Arborist Association. What questions do you have about pruning, about disease, about putting in trees into your landscape? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Albert, who's joining us from Milwaukee this morning. Hi, Albert.
Yes, good morning. Hi.
Hi.
Curious to know, what is the difference between a huge bush and a tree? I mean, some bushes get bigger than some trees. So is there a difference in taking care of a bush versus a small tree like arborvitae? I mean,
Yes, I think definitely one thing that helps determine a tree versus a bush is size. So we have, you know, sometimes nurseries classify them differently. We have something called a tree form shrub, which is generally, you know, a multi-stem shrub that is coming out from the ground, but it's going to have that bigger size, like that 20-foot, et cetera, canopy. And then there's also a shrub form tree. So people talk about them a little bit differently. But I think in large part, it's the species that defines it. And it's also just the habit and the size of the plant.
Albert, thanks so much, Albert. Let's bring in Steve in Whitefish Bay with a question. Hi, Steve.
Hi, good morning. I caught the tail end of the fruit tree conversation. I'm growing some fruit trees in my small backyard, and I've been looking more into sprays that you can do before winter, like dormancy sprays that would help you get a head start on the bugs of next year. What do you recommend for fruiting trees? I've got Asian pear and some peaches that I would want to look into spraying to prevent all these little critters in spring.
Sure. So dormant fall horticultural oil is a fantastic way to suppress those hatches and also different types of fungi and bacteria in the spring. So it's something that we use quite often. Dormant oils are my preference because you can put them on a little heavier than you can something like summer oils, which has the potential to clog that stomata in the leaf. So we really utilize those dormant oils to the maximum. And many of them, I mean, you can pick up a dormant oil from really any garden store. And the way to really make sure that that is as effective as possible is to get really good coverage. So you want to make sure that you wait until dormancy. Sometimes the application of that can be very tricky. So you have kind of two parameters that you need to follow. And one is that you don't have freezing nights. And two is that you have dormancy. You get about a week. You complete that application in the fall, but you can also have another opportunity to complete that application in the spring. So if if it snows and freezes too fast for you to really be able to spray those trees in dormancy, then you have that opportunity again where you're below freezing, but you're still in dormancy in the spring to take care of the hatch that had been laid on the trees from the previous season.
Yeah, timing is everything. Thanks, Steve. We have Brianna Frank, a certified arborist, and we're taking your tree questions back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our fall and winter tree care conversation with certified arborist Brianna Frank as our guide. The sugar maple is our state's official tree, by the way, and the source of maple syrup. So yummy. We're taking a close look at all the trees around us and ensuring we're giving them proper care. Let's bring in Rosa now from Waterford. Hi, Rosa.
Good morning. I have about 15 of the skyrocket junipers on the south side of my house. It's in the backyard, like on the low end. And I noticed on some of them that they have on the branches, they're like an orangey, rusty, like a powdery thing on the branches, as well as like these orange spiky balls. And I've been pulling those balls out. And I've had different viewpoints. I'm trying to research what it is. And in your opinion, is it something to be concerned about, or what are your thoughts?
Yes. So what that sounds like to me is cedar apple rust. So cedar apple rust is a fungal disease that has an alternate life cycle on a crab apple. It's potentially cedar hawthorn rust as well. That has the alternate life cycle on a hawthorn. So it is It is kind of the fungal body that is left over. And there's a couple different ways that we control it. And usually the best way is, you know, to remove one or other of those hosts. So if there's, you know, a crabapple that you're not attached to that is helping to kind of create that cycle of disease on the juniper, then removing one of the hosts will take care of the disease. Sometimes you can't remove the host because your neighbor might have the alternate. So it's not 100%. You definitely want to take a look around the landscape and see if you could have hosts that don't belong to you. But those jelly-like little tendrils, those are just the galls that are a result of this particular disease. So sometimes we can prune out branches that die back because of the disease. And then there are spring sprays that will help suppress those spores. So that is definitely something to get in touch with your arborist about and kind of decide what the best pathway is for you.
How does that sound, Rosa?
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's bring in Mary Jane now in Pewaukee. Hi, Mary Jane.
Hi. I have a question about a lilac. It's a bush, I guess, not a tree. My family loves them, and I grew up on a farm that had many here in Wisconsin. And then I lived in North Carolina for about 26 years, and I rarely saw one because people told me it was just too hot there. My son now lives in the Kansas City area and has had a big lilac bush for maybe 15 years. And he called the other day to say it's going into full bloom. And this October doesn't seem any different than other Octobers. It's always still warm there. And so his question is, what triggers that to happen? It has never happened before. Is it truly some climate change?
Well, I think that we do have some confused plants. We have definitely had other types of trees that have been having multiple blooms due to the longer seasonality. So it's not just the season, you know, just what's happening in October, but rather a culmination of what's happened throughout the season that causes, you know, plants to want to bloom more than once. We see it oftentimes on forsythia and some types of magnolia. And ultimately, we don't really worry about it too intensely. It's not, you know, it's not a great energy cost to the plant to throw out those extra blooms in late season. And you know, it is something that I think we can attribute to a changing climate in seasonality.
All right. Well, Mary Jane, he can enjoy those blooms then. You can enjoy them from afar.
I'll tell him that. Thanks.
Thank you. Jody now in Rice Lake. Hi, Jody.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question about some walnut trees. They were planted 50 years ago, and there's several of them, but two of them are dying. What kind of fungus or disease do these walnut trees get, and how can I save them?
Well, it's, you know, that's something that really we'd love to take a look at because it might be something that has to do with your root system and potentially some root rot. There is a few different fungal diseases that walnuts can get that cause them to defoliate early, but actual dieback is something that you definitely want to have looked at and make sure that you don't have something decay-wise, becoming an issue for your tree.
It could be multiple things going on with those walnut trees. How long do walnut trees live?
Well, that is a question that we get all the time. and, you know, it's really hard to answer exactly how long a tree, especially in the urban environment, will live because the lifespan is often a product of what happens to the tree through its existence. So how it's been maintained, you know, if it had large pruning wounds that are able to decay and, you know, cause the tree to be a structural issue. So I think, you know, in general, walnuts have the potential to be on the landscape for 100 years.
Yeah.
It's, it's really subject to what happens to them throughout their lifespan.
Sure. Talking with Brianna Frank, a certified arborist. She's fielding all your tree care questions as we head into the cooler months. So, Brianna, the black spots are back. Jen in Green Bay couldn't stay with us, but called in to say she has lots of trees that have black spots. Where do they come from? And one is a silver maple.
So, yes, there's lots of black spots out there this season. And once again, that kind of comes back to those multiple cycles that different diseases have had, rather than, you know, just their one throughout the season. So our fungal load, our spore load, is very high. So we've had, you know, black spots are, you know, there's a few different diseases that could fit that description. You know, we have tar spot on maples, we have anthracnose on maples, but most of those, the black spotting on foliage is cosmetic.
Okay.
So it's not something that people need to be afraid of. University recommends oftentimes raking up those leaves and moving them off of your property. But depending on what's going on in your neighborhood, if you have a whole lot of maples that are infected with the disease, unless everybody does the same thing, you might be doing a lot of work without much benefit.
How are we doing controlling the emerald ash borer? Is that a defeat there, or what is the spread like?
Well, I mean, we've definitely hit a peak where we're seeing lots of dead trees. And it's really, you know, it's very cut and dry in that untreated trees are not going to make it through this invasive pest. So, you know, every tree is not treatable. Not every tree should be treated. And the trees that are treated, you know, we have a very good success rate with those types of treatments. But at this point, you know, if you haven't been preventatively treating, it's very difficult to determine what the efficacy of those treatments will be after you already have an infestation.
Yeah. Are there other invasive species that are really harmful to trees right now?
Right now, I think emerald ash borer is kind of the hottest on our list. You know, we have invasive species like Japanese beetles that cause a lot of foliar damage that really concerns people. And in general, you know, we don't like to see early defoliation of any tree year after year, because that tree can't photosynthesize through those months and store sugars. So it eventually will lead to tree stress. But for the most part, trees handle that type of, you know, the minimal defoliation just fine. And they leaf out again, and the Japanese beetle comes back. So I think that's probably the biggest one that we hear complaints about. We are on the lookout for spotted lanternfly, which we haven't found in the state of Wisconsin yet. So we aren't recommending anything as far as that goes. We're always watching.
Always watching. Well, Brianna, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Brianna Frank is a certified arborist and a tree risk assessor. She's owner of Tree Health Management in Madison. She's also past president of the Wisconsin Arborist Association. For disclosure, Tree Health Management is a business sponsor of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.